the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.
Hi everyone, Tessa here, and welcome to an episode of the mini-series of the Radio Life Sciences Podcast about failing. And today I am here with Sabrina Gens, assistant professor in economics and also a coach in the online coaching community of the University of Utrecht. And she also focuses on PhD coaching. Hi Sabrina, welcome.
Hi Tessa, hi. Thank you for the invitation.
We're very happy that you're here. We're going to be talking about failure today. Have you ever failed yourself?
Of course I have. I repeatedly fail myself. And if I think about when I recently failed, I think it was just about yesterday. So I actually had to write a report, which was due on Friday, but I didn't manage to write it in time. So it was actually Sunday that I finished it and handed it in. So that might be already one example of failure. But I think it's very important to mention that it really belongs on your own perspective. What do you define as a failure? So for others, this might sound as, oh no, that's not a huge failure. What is she talking about? And for others, it sounds like this would be tremendously a failure, and it's like inevitable to always send reports in time, so it would be a big failure.
Right. So to you, this was a failure.
I would say a small one.
Okay. And how do you deal with this yourself?
It's very important to also look on the circumstances. So for me, it was really that I was very busy and I knew already ahead of time, so before Friday, that probably I won't be able to finish it in time. So I managed my expectations already before coming to that deadline that I won't hand it in time. I sent a small email already announcing it will be a little bit late. And then it was fine for me because I knew, okay, there's nothing else I can do. I just give me another 2 days and then I will finish it.
Okay, good. So you're, besides an assistant professor, you're also a coach here at the UU. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
So that's really an exciting side job to do because it really connects me with students at Utrecht University. So the purpose of online coaching is that we're offering students a place where they can share their fears, their problems, their thoughts with an online coach. So we all have a training in coaching. Most of our coaches are psychology students who are themselves still in their education. And they just use this platform as a practice to advance their own coaching skills. And I just love this, to connect to students, to hear what are their struggles and actually share some insights from my own experience, because I have also been a PhD. I also have been a master's student. So I very much can resonate with all the struggles that they're going through. And I can share some of my techniques and ways that I have applied during my PhD that actually were really useful to me.
Wow, nice. And what type of issues do GSLS students and PhD students come to this sort of coaching?
So a lot of them also struggle with time management, as I just described with my own report. So here you already see I'm just alike. But another issue that comes across is self-doubt. And we always use the term imposter syndrome for this,
right?
Which is very much common struggle among master students, but specifically also among PhD students.
Can you explain for students?
Yes. So imposter syndrome can actually be summarized by a negative self picture or doubts about your own performance. So to make it very specific, if you're a PhD student, and you're constantly asking yourself, oh, can I really do this? Why am I actually here? Why did they choose me to do this PhD? I'm actually not as smart as all the other students. And they will shortly find out that I'm really just a failure. And I'm not worth doing this PhD. And they will end my contract. And this will be the end of the world. And if you detect yourself with those kind of thoughts, like repeatedly questioning why you're in your PhD and are you smart enough, are you talented enough, and you have your own negative self-perception that you're not good enough, and that you are a failure and you are just too stupid to do this, then this would be a classical case of suffering from imposter syndrome.
And how does this go when someone is coming to you, to your coaching with this exact problem? Where do you start with this person?
So most of the times they don't really know about imposter syndrome or that this is common among all PhDs or among a high number of PhDs, not all certainly, but a large share. And they just start like, oh, I feel so insecure and I have so many doubts and I don't know how I can pursue with my PhD. And I feel so lonely and I don't really dare to share this with others because then they just think I'm stupid. And then the first step is actually that I share with them how common this problem is and how many PhD students suffer from those thoughts. And that might be a very, very first important step to solving the struggle in making them aware that this is a very common PhD challenge and that they're not alone. And this is certainly nothing, that something is wrong with them, that is just coming from a lot of different angles that contribute why so many PhD students feel those kind of thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Would you say it's a fixable train of thought to be on?
Yes. So luckily there are a lot of solutions, and luckily it's not like the end, you can't change it. It's really if you're aware of it, creating the awareness and also having a purpose and knowing that you can change it actually can really help solving it very quickly, or at least making it less severe and making the PhD students learn how to live with it and how to handle situations in a better way.
Okay. Because we got a question from a student. You can send in questions to the podcast if you like. And they were wondering about this pressure that PhD students feel, for example, about publishing scientific articles. And they were even doubting whether to choose a PhD after the master's. So can you give this student some specific tips on what they could do if they were in a situation that you were just describing?
Yeah, thanks for sending in this question. I think that it's really a remarkable question, also signaling that even before you're choosing to do the PhD, you might be confronted with thoughts about, am I good enough? Will I be able to publish articles? How can I handle all the stress? Because this is something that gets reflected from other cohorts back to the younger students. So I think it's very, very important that you are aware about that the PhD is a time with a lot of challenges. And if you are equipped with a lot of tips about, okay, what can you actually expect and how can you make yourself already be prepared for some of the challenges, then it is really a very nice period. It is a period where you can explore yourself, where you can grow personally, academically, and you can experience just a lot of cool things. So I would say, yes, definitely, if you're thinking about doing a PhD, go for it. But I would like to share a couple of techniques and thoughts for this student sending in the question, how to actually equip yourself better for the journey ahead.
Please share.
So one of the first things I always would like to stress is manage your expectations. So the PhD will be a phases where nobody will grade you regularly. So if you think about your master's studies, there are specific times when you have to do an exam or you have to do another internship. You are constantly evaluated and you constantly get this feedback about your performance, where do you stand, where do you also stand in comparison to other PhD or other students around you. But this will not be the case anymore when you're doing a PhD. When you're doing a PhD, you are on your own journey and there's not a fixed set of things that you do or when you're doing them or what are the specific outcomes. So actually creating an awareness about the circumstances of how you study, how you will hand in results, that really tremendously changes. And then if you're aware of this, that a lot of your recognition will fall apart because you will not get the signal from exams and comments from professors. It's really just you and your own work. Then you have to create the recognition and actually the permission that you're doing good enough and that you're on a good track.
How can students do this?
Yeah, that's a big question mark. So I always recommend talking to your supervisor regularly and asking for feedback, because professors most of the times are not aware about how important that might be to students, that you actually need constant feedback to also adjust where you want to go, but also to gather positive feedback on the way that you already went so far. So actively ask your supervisor, what are the steps? What are the intermediate goals? Like, break your big goal of achieving the PhD down into smaller pieces. So really break it down into years, set goals for every specific year, and then within the year, set goals for the winter term, for the summer term, and then even go one step down and really define your goals based on a week-to-week basis. And then just share with others, what are you doing, and get feedback on how are you doing it, so that you're actually yourself creating this point of reference on, am I on a good track?
Yeah, and what, the support network.
Yeah, and what me also personally helped was to keep the track in a journal. Okay. So to write it down, you can have many different ways. For example, you can collect to-do lists and then just tick off your to-do lists. But be realistic in this, right? Mm-hmm. Don't just put 20 to-dos for 1 hour. That might be too much. So be realistic on how many to-dos you actually can accomplish within a given set of time. But by starting collecting what your tasks are and then also tracking how long it actually took you, you can develop in the beginning of your PhD a very good sense of your productivity and how long it will take you, which will help you in the end to be more productive, more realistic, and not having this high set goals that you can't reach because they're just unrealistic.
Yeah.
And also, you also already mentioned social network. So creating your own support group around you that actually can give you feedback and positive compliments is so crucial. So also think about a network outside academia. Think about your own relationship. Maybe you have a partner or you have very good friends or even family you want to share, and you want to just let them know what you're doing so that they can also serve as a sounding board, like, hey, you're doing so much work. Mm-hmm. This really sounds like you are doing a lot, so I think you're on a good track. But they most importantly can also stop you.
Right.
When they see that you're changing in a negative way, in the way that you're overstressed, you're setting too high expectations, or you're never satisfied with reaching your milestones, then they can be a very important partner to signal you, hey, right, I think you did it good, so why don't you acknowledge yourself?
Yeah, that's also an interesting, just to compliment as a support network and to maybe celebrate when things are going the way you want them.
Yes, so that is also one very important dimension of the imposter syndrome, that you're not allowing yourself to make yourself a compliment, that you're not proud about your own success. And that is really something that you should embrace and that you should do in order to alleviate the imposter syndrome. So if you can learn to compliment yourself, to give your compliment and to be proud of yourself, then this really can impact your life in a very positive way. So, for example, let me ask you the question, what do you do when you're proud of yourself? Do you actually compliment yourself? Or, like, what would you do if you're proud of yourself?
That's an interesting question, because sometimes it's just a thought. And or an emotion of feeling happy without immediately going into the sensation of, oh, this means that I'm proud. But I'm on this journey of trying to enunciate it a bit more to myself that I am proud. And it helps me to stupidly just pat myself on the shoulder when no one is looking. And to have this moment of, okay, now I'm proud and now I'm going to express it. and that will, it's super forced right now, but it will be smoother and smoother as I'm getting more aware, used to giving myself these compliments.
I love it. Yeah. So that is so important because, as you say, we're not really used to do this.
No.
So it is so important to learn it yourself. I love that you're clapping yourself on the shoulder. That is a really, really great way.
No one is looking.
But no, you you should do this. Also, if it feels silly, like laughing about it and making it in a way of joke can actually help to introduce it more frequently into your life. Even though if you're doing it in a way of joking, it still will feel more normal after you did it a couple of times. Another way how you could train it is really take a journal at the end of the day and write down three things that you accomplished this specific day. And they can be very basic. So, for example, it can be you have a stressful day, but still you were able to cook for yourself instead of going and get a pizza from a delivery service. That can be a success for your own life and for your own health. And so this would be something that you could write down. Or another thing, maybe you were seeing somebody needs help when stepping into the bus or the train and you help this person stepping in. Those small things, actually, if you remember them at the end of the day and you write those things down as a success for your own, then it will help you cultivate this culture of actually paying attention to the things that are working out. And then in the end, it will also be easier for yourself to write down work-related things that you did great and that were successful, because those are the hardest ones to give ourselves recognition.
Yeah. It's a very interesting technique. Yeah. So now we talked about our own perceptions of failing and that failing is really in the eye of the beholder, so to say. But what if you made a mistake that is so obvious that everyone agrees this is a failure? Mm-hmm. How do you move on from that point?
Yeah, good question. So if there's really a big, big thing that completely went wrong, that you're really not in doubt, this is a shit show. So if those things happen, it's very good to have a plan ex ante, to actually know what is helping you and to have like a backup security plan. And if a really big failure happens, then you just don't think and you just go into this plan. So what could this be? One of the things I really think is important is to work with your emotions. Because in the moment when there is a big failure or when you realize that you have made a big mistake, then a lot of negative emotions come across. So you feel anger, you feel grief, and there are a lot of emotions that you could feel at that moment. And it's very important to actually sit with them for a little while and feel them. Try to give them a word. Try to give them a name and actually explore what is the specific feeling right now. And while you're doing this, actually you realize, okay, your level of emotion levels down a little bit. Because when we're focused on feeling what is this explicit emotion actually, how would I name it? It's a very challenging task because most of the times we don't take the time to really go deep into an emotion and feel where is it coming from and what is it actually. So really be explicit about it, feel it, and be okay with it, accept it. There are reasons why it went wrong, and just accept it for this little moment that we are all human beings, we all fail. And if you do a mistake, then you're just showing that you're human. And don't judge yourself directly. So please try to postpone this judgment as long as you can. And first try to see if you can do something good for yourself. And what do I mean with something good? So really think about something that levels up your emotion in a positive way again. For example, I have a Spotify playlist on my phone, which I filled with music that really resonates with me, that gives me a lot of joy and a lot of positive energy when I listen it in a normal level of emotion. But when I'm in such a phases of really bad emotions, then explicitly listening to those songs that normally make me smile, make me feel happy, make me dance, actually can help to get rid of this really, really bottom line of the bad emotion.
Okay.
Of this negative emotion. And maybe also one more thing I think is important to mention is, because I now said bad emotion, I think it's very important that we don't make such a judgment about mm-hmm. bad emotion or good emotion. So,
but they feel bad.
Exactly.
Right.
They're all emotions. They all belong to us. And it's okay to feel a bad emotion.
Yeah.
It's just that this is easier for most of the persons to understand what emotion am I talking about. Because our society really stigmatizes bad and good emotions. But so this playlist really helps to go out of a bad emotion, like anger.
You're doing the finger quotes.
Yeah. Anger or grief or
the
frustration.
Unpleasant feeling.
Exactly.
Emotion.
Those that are really unpleasant to feel, to get them out a little bit again and to really make it okay that this happened and they make feel you better again.
Right.
And another thing might be if you're a sports person, just directly take your sports shoes and go running or go into the gym and do exercise and do what you normally would do. This really, like the physical emotion can help you to get over your feelings and to process what just actually happened. And sometimes it can be just be busy in your mind so that your inner monkey in your head stops mm-hmm. jumping. And that you focus on your body and you're connected with yourself. And after this exercise, it might feel already less severe and you might be able to accept more, okay, this was just another day of human being with making mistakes.
Right, yeah. So not to flee away from the problems or emotions and not to fight with them, but just to kind of embrace them, face them and deal with them.
Exactly, and also take enough time for doing so. So if this happens in a very stressful day where you're rushed with appointment to appointment, then actually it can make sense to maybe skip the next appointment and to cancel a dinner with friends or to cancel going by your grandma and celebrating her birthday. Just take enough time mm-hmm. for your own to for a moment sit with your emotion and then do something about it that really helps you and your own emotions, as doing sports, listening to music, painting, whatever activity that normally helps you. I personally also love to bake. So if I'm stressed or I'm like worried, I love to bake and do something with my hands. So really do physical activity, create something with my hands that really helps me reconnect with my own level of everything as well. And so just explore what is it for you, what works for you, and then have these tools available and make yourself aware, okay, this is such a situation where I could actually use some strategies to help me out of a dip. And then take enough time and actually do those activities.
Yeah, so nice. You mentioned to stay away from judgment as long as possible. How can we do this?
Yeah.
It's a difficult thing to do.
It is so difficult because our brain directly jumps into this negative judgment and creating our thoughts like, oh, you're so stupid. Others would not have happened this or you're really not good enough. And why did this happen again? And why did it happen to you? So those are these inner judgments that are directly coming. And what I like to figure with the monkey in your head. So you're really just, a monkey is jumping crazy in your head with those kind of negative thoughts and negative judgments. And they can be very, coming from different angles. And I think it's very important to step out for a second and to say, okay, go on the meta phases and say, being aware, hey, my monkey is jumping. And be aware that they are just thoughts. They are not yourself. It's not like your thoughts are not per se 100% your human being. You actually can change your thoughts. And with going into a different activity, like listening to music, doing exercise, you have a chance to stop them for a little while. And while you're distracted with some other activity, actually your monkey calms down a little bit. And then after your monkey calmed down, you can go back to those thoughts and you can go back to the situation, to the mistake that happened to you, to actually see, okay, if I now put away all the immediate negative emotions, so all the immediate insecurities and fear, and I very much objectively would evaluate the situation, then you might realize that maybe it is not as bad as you thought, or that there were specific reasons why this mistake happened, and that with having an understanding about the circumstances, how the situation came across, it's much easier to accept it and to forgive yourself. So one of the exercises I like to give my coachees is also to ask yourself, what would you recommend a friend if the friend would share exactly this story with you? So take your own mistake, take your own failure, and then ask yourself, what would you recommend to your best friend?
Right.
If your best friend would just share the story with you. And it's just so interesting that if you would ask yourself just directly, what would you do? How would you reason him? Then students don't really come up with an answer. But as soon as I ask this as, hey, what would you recommend to a friend? So not to yourself, but to another person that is very much appreciated by yourself, then they can suddenly come up with solutions or with reasoning why this happened and with an objective reasoning why it's not as bad as they first thought. And this is so important to take all these steps and these reasonings to realize, okay, objectively, a lot of other persons actually don't think it's such a tremendous mistake and such a failure. Actually, objectively, okay, it was maybe not the best situation, but it was also certainly not like the apocalypse,
right,
worst thing ever happened.
Yeah. And maybe from this objective standpoint, you can see solutions or give yourself feedback in what to do
exactly.
Next time something occurs like that.
Exactly. Mm. And also this reasoning like, hey, it is just human to fail.
Right.
That this awareness actually comes when you're having an objective view on what just happened. Mm. And then, as you said, like developing strategies, how to prevent such things from happening again, or to collect a list of reasons why it might have happened,
right,
in order to being able to accept it. And in order to say, okay, now I see a lot of things maybe were not even in my circle of like influence. So I actually could not have done anything different. And still the situation would have happened.
Yes.
So that it's not all your fault,
right,
that most of the time situations are a circumstance, like a collection of circumstances from a lot of different people and just bad luck sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's not all 100% your fault. And this awareness actually can also help accepting the situation and coming over this big failure or mistake.
Right, right, yeah. Okay. So to come back to this coaching of yours, what sort of topics do GSLS students, PT students come to you? What sort of issues do they bring to you?
Yeah. So those negative fears and imposter syndrome is one of the
In what context?
Occurring a lot of times. So for example, with a difficult conversation with the supervisor.
Right.
So if students are into their PhD, and then there will come one of the other times a situation where the supervisor does not agree with the PhD student, or the PhD student does not agree with the PhD supervisor, and there is different communication styles, then actually this can fuel these negative self-thoughts. Another common challenge that I see occurring with my coaches is perfectionism. So most of the times, also a lot of female PhD candidates come with the question of, I just don't know how I can change my work habit. I feel limited,
right,
by this need to do everything perfect. And then actually I don't get things done because I just keep them on for a too long time.
Yeah.
And another thing, time management.
Right.
You're not handing in your
papers or your work that you agreed to submit in time, and that can lead to a lot of problems with supervisors again. And also just very basic questions about work-life balance, because it is a period where most of the students really accelerate in working hours. So they are in the beginning phase, super motivated. They want to do this. They are driven. They want to continue with research and they want to find out results that are interesting. But then after being in there for a couple of months, it actually can be very straining in terms of work-life balance if you're working too many hours.
Yeah.
And then it is super simple, but just reminding the students about, hey, what is your healthy work-life balance? Mm-hmm. And how does a healthy work-life balance look like for you, for your specific needs and your specific life circumstances? It's actually also one of the very, very common conversations that I have with my coaches.
Yeah. And you mentioned that female students are prone to perfectionism. Do you see any other differences within your coaches, perhaps in age or whether international or Dutch?
Yeah, so it's interesting that you bring up the cultural differences. I also see a lot of issues coming from cultural differences. So, for example, with foreign PhD students that are doing their PhD here in the Netherlands, it really can be a very, very large gap between how they would express themselves in terms of communication and how their mostly Dutch supervisors are expressing themselves. A cultural difference in communication styles, and that can of course contribute to a lot of problems, a lot of issues that unintentionally somebody, either the Dutch supervisor or the foreign PhD student, are saying something without any harmful intentions, but the other is receiving it in a completely different context and making a completely different judgment about the reasoning and circumstances why the other person has said this. So,
and that can feel as a sort of a failure, why
yes,
not and intended it can, in either way.
Exactly, and it can lead to a lot of problems, like really conflicts between the PhD supervisor and the PhD student that are not intended. But like looking at this from the angle of, okay, what is your basic expectation about communication styles? Or what did you think about this? And what has actually been said in the conversation to disentangle those two aspects? That can be super helpful and insightful for the PhD to actually reason again, why did a specific situation occur? And how can I prevent it in the next time? So having understood cultural differences and the way how we communicate can actually help us to prevent a big conversation going wrong in the next time.
Right. Okay. And in a practical sense, let's say that our listeners listening us to right now and thinking, ooh, I recognize these issues. I should do something with it. What's the first thing a GSLS PhD student or a master student can do?
So, for example, if you're really suffering from a specific situation that we just described, you're of course very welcome to join us in the online coaching community, because our service is free of charge. So students can just go on our website and book an appointment with our coaches. So that would be a very, very first immediate solution that I would like to share with our listeners. And another one is really just take your time, sit down and think about, okay, what actually helps me to go out of a deep negative emotion, for example, and develop your strategy plan for the worst case scenario situations, to have them laying apart so that you know, okay, if something happens, I'm well equipped, because the security on I actually can handle bad situations, that is so important to be more self-secure and to actually be more happy and go through your PhD with less fear.
Yeah, this sort of affirmations, these one-liners you can say to yourself, those really help me as well. I say to myself, forcibly, I can handle this.
Yes, I can do this.
Me. Yeah, Yeah.
I love to work with affirmations.
Silly the first 100 times to do it, and afterwards it's kind of empowering.
Exactly. And actually, you can specifically think about affirmations also related to work life. So related to your PhD, take your time and just come up with 3, 4, 5 affirmations.
Yeah.
And then write them down on your phone or write them down in a nice picture that you really also physically have a nice way to looking at them.
I stuck a little note in my mirror every time I brush my teeth.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, also putting a nice picture on your desk in your university where you're doing all the hard work and then being reminded from time to time, hey, I'm good enough.
Right.
I'm doing a great work. Work is fun. And like positive affirmations can really help you to just smile from time to time while you're working and just resonate with a positive feeling instead of just this stress and negative self-doubts.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Yeah, it really works. You mentioned a lot of great things I feel students can use. What is your most important message to students as you were kind of to summarize what we talked about?
So I would recommend all the listeners to be thoughtful about your own thoughts and your own inner world. So be aware about what is happening inside you. And then just know that challenges, mistakes, failure is just very human. So we're all struggling with the same things, even though we're not openly talking about it. So be aware, we're just human beings. Mistakes will happen. And just have your toolkit laying apart, like next to you, to actually apply them. And you can actually do something about it. You can make your life more easy and more happy by very, very simple techniques. So dare to apply them and dare to experiment with those things, even though they sound silly and they sound very trivial. Just experiment with it and find your own way on handling such challenging situations.
Beautifully said. Thank you very much for being here, Sabrina. And I want to thank the Committee of Student Wellbeing for helping set up this podcast, as well as Brendan Maetz. And I want to thank you all for listening. And until next episode of Radio Life Sciences. Thanks, Sabrina. Bye. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Radio Life Sciences. Radio Life Sciences. Radio.
Welcome to the Radio Life Sciences podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.